Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, as usual, download the Acast app. If you haven't done it yet, it's really worth doing. It's free and you get to listen to the podcast in a completely different way. Little messages pop up, little pictures and links and things like that. And as usual, we ask you, could you recommend us to three people you know who would like the box set pod? If you did that, it would make a phenomenal difference. So please do. And as usual, you can email us, studio@theboxsetpod.com. studio@theboxsetpod.com. Also, worth going and looking at our beautiful website, theboxsetpod.com. It's got the news on there, it's got little bits from the show, and you can also, without downloading Acast, you can watch and listen to the podcast on the player there as well. Thank you. Welcome to episode 12 of the Box Set Pod.
Wow.
I'm Howell.
I'm Jamie.
Lots to deal with today on the show. We've got a man who you may not have heard of, Russell Gomer, but he is a very funny man and a brilliant storyteller. That's why we're getting him on, not least because he plays Yanto in the superb Stella series, which is happening at the moment.
It's Stella started back up, hasn't it?
Yeah, from Ruth Jones. So we'll be chatting to him. He's one of the funniest characters in there, I think, and one of the oddest as well. And it comes from a brilliant mind. We'll be talking to him shortly. Fife Dangerfield will join us this week as well, talking about where he's up to as our guinea pig. The man who sang She's Always a Woman to Me by Billy Joel for a TV advert and is in the Guillemots and plays music as Fife Dangerfield. He'll be joining us in a bit. First, thank you, Pam, for your email. This is amazing. A couple of podcasts ago, I said that I had this idea. I said, fundamentally, people find it hard to deal with the end of a box set. It ends and your life is empty and you wonder what you're going
to
do.
And you find it hard, you were saying, to let go of those characters.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why I suggested that what you should do, there's a gap in the market for a box set that ends with the characters turning into the real actors. You watch them walk off set.
I think this is a ludicrous idea.
Jamie thought this was a ludicrous idea.
I still darn well do.
Well, let me read to you this. Pam emails, hi Howell and Jamie, just watch the last episode of The Last Medium.
Oh.
Fried Like a Banshee. This is about someone who can talks to dead people.
It's got a Patricia Arquette.
But get this, they used Howell's idea. Possibly before he had it. Well, definitely before I had it. All the main characters said their goodbye as they walked off set.
What? Oh, come on.
That series
was lame.
Bloody marvellous, says Pam. I feel my husband and I with our family have grown with the characters. I feel at that bereft stage when you feel when you complete a good box set. I emailed back saying, Pam, are you serious? They walk off the set and become themselves, like out of character, like actors, like I suggested. She emailed back, genuinely, they are themselves on the set, which you see complete with the films they created, house, wall and everything. And then they walk off, including flashbacks to earlier bits in the series. It was brilliant. I'm now being made to have a go at the second season of Walking Dead after watching 3 and 4 back to back.
Oh, how weird. So you missed season 2. Well, you know what? Season 3 and 4 are better than 2. I'll tell you that now, but it's worth to watch all.
So thank you very much, Pam.
I'd like to see that episode. I mean, I've never really got into Medium, so I've never watched it completely. I still feel like it would, I'd feel a little bit like, well, they don't need to show. I don't know if I'd like it, and it'd feel a bit phony to me.
Because if you just don't believe that you can talk to dead people, you're never going to buy into it. Is that what you're thinking?
Well, no, but I just, in general, I'm able to let go of the TV characters.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you meant that series specifically. Yeah. Yeah, maybe you're just a more together person.
I just don't need, like, no, Pam might be a very together lady. She's got good taste in stuff. But this is the thing, Pam, I do feel like,
what kind of cold-hearted swine are you?
Well,
I just feel this person.
Of course,
connection.
I miss it. There's episodes of TV shows where I've been gutted when a character's died. I've been genuinely gutted. Yeah. But you know, you process it, you move on.
Mm.
I don't need them to show me that it's an actor. I don't need that.
We were also talking last week about which box set you would take into space. Which two or three box sets would you take with you that are so personal and so brilliant that you would take it with you? Pam clearly would take that. Well, that's Fife the same thing for him in a bit, though I don't know why we're asking him, because he's a guinea pig. He's not really watched anything.
He's barely watched a thing.
Before we get the news and before Fife and Russell, I need to have a rant.
Oh, I love it.
I need your help. I need you to email me if you have watched the complete box set of Prison Break.
Oh.
I decided that I wanted to do it. We started Prison Break a couple of weeks ago, and there's a lot of episodes in every series, and we are two episodes off the end of the second series at the moment. Now, there is a fundamental question with Prison Break, which is how do you stretch out a Prison Break for five series?
Well,
when you start it, you think, well, clearly they're not going to break out. Well, that may not be the case. I'm not going to say either way. However, here's my problem. I've got two issues with Prison Break. I need to know from you whether I should carry on. My issue is this. It makes me so angry. At the start of every episode, they do a recap, because there's a lot of characters involved. They do a recap of the last of things that are going to be important for this episode.
Yeah.
And I know this happens a lot, but it's such a spoiler. For example, they'll cut back to an episode two episodes ago when one of them happened to say, this prison break we're planning, we've got one too many men.
Yeah.
We're going to have to lose a man.
But that's
what's going to happen in this episode? Is someone going to get stabbed? Or
well, that's what a lot of shows do. West Wing does that.
Yeah, but
I know what you mean. It's not based around twists and turns.
Well, this
much.
Brings me on to my second problem, is that what compounds that is that the whole of Prison Break is a bit like with Lost. You know that you're never going to get a resolution. So a scene may begin where somebody, let's make up an entirely, I'm not going to use any spoilers, so let's make up a scenario in our own world.
Okay.
Me and you go home.
Go home together.
We get in the car.
Get in the car.
We say how wonderful it is that we're in the car and we're going to go home.
Sounds excellent.
You know when watching Prison Break, but by the end of that scene,
we won't get home.
The car will have broken
down. Or will flipped on its side and will be upside down and about to burn to death.
Exactly. And it's literally...
And Howell won't survive. I'll make it out of the car.
The language of the...
Howell will die.
The language of the structure, because the acting's brilliant. I love the characters in it.
Yeah.
I do like the story in it. And yet, it does that literally 30 times an episode.
Yes.
And what I got used to with the world of Breaking Bad, which of course came later and things like that, is that they put themselves into that corner and they find a different way to get out of it. So they would make it home, but then something else will happen. It's not that constant cliffhanger.
See, I think what's interesting about this is this is what makes the idea of a box set really fascinating from this point of view, because
you're not watching it once a week,
which is different. And I'd probably say it's better in a way to watch it in a big chunk, because then if you are getting annoyed, you can go, right, I'll watch another one then and see what's happening, and you can keep moving forward.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I watched Prison Break as like an episode-by-episode basis, not in box set form, and I got to season, I think we got to season three, and I gave up on it. I'd just run out, and a lot like Lost, I'd run out of steam. There was too many twists,
too many turns. Patience.
I didn't have it in me to go on, but I might have stuck with it if I was watching it all in big chunks of box set binging.
No.
But it's actually annoying you more in a way.
It's so much more annoying.
So
because I just feel tense all day. I might watch four episodes back to back. And I just feel tense and never, ever get a relief from it. It's like somebody saying, come upstairs, I'm going to cook you a meal. And you go upstairs and they go, but we have to go to another building. So you go to another, and they go, but we need to be somewhere else. But we need to go downstairs. But we need to go. Yeah. And after a sit for a while, that's entertaining. After a while, you just go, what are you doing?
Yeah, in the end, you just end up with, you get twist lash, is what I call it.
Twist lash.
You get so sick of the twists, you get lash.
So should I carry on? Is it worth, I mean, the other problem.
Well, they only made four series.
Is it only four?
Yeah, I thought there was more, but there's only four series.
Oh, well... I think I am going to finish it, because that's the other problem with this, is you get so far into something that unless you're you, cold-hearted man, you can just ditch it. I have to, it's almost like a nervous tick. I've got to scratch the itch.
Well, you know what the thing is this, right? And I believe this is a really important point with twist-based TV shows. They have to give you, they should definitely give you a satisfying ending at the end. If they don't, they should all be probably imprisoned or, you know, just placed in a hole in the ground.
All right, will you please?
Because you deserve a good ending. You deserve to know that things are fine and satisfactory at the end of going on that journey.
And it's got to that point where we're watching it and the scene will start and we will say how it's going to end.
Well,
that's not going to happen.
And I think yeah.
Oh, that guy's just made a phone call saying how happy he is that this is nearly all over.
Yeah.
Guess what? He's dead in the next 5 minutes.
Exactly. You know he's coming. And so in a way, like, those kind of shows are fun. There's a similar show I watch called Under the Dome, which is really rubbish, full of twists that you can predict.
Yeah.
But it's great to watch if you're watching it in conjunction with something that's quite heavy.
Right.
Say you're watching The Fall from BBC One.
Yeah.
Or even like The Sopranos, something that's quite heavy going.
Yeah.
Thick and denser, The Wire. Under the Dome's a great, like, different colour. So you can just go into that world and it doesn't tax you. It doesn't take much out of you.
I can't go a box set without mentioning Chuck a few times. And the comparison there is that they don't actually do that. With Chuck, that's an example of a light thing where everything is brought to a happy ending pretty much every episode. So every episode you get a conclusion. And that can wear thin.
That can wear
as well.
I used to find that with Scrubs. Like, I love Scrubs.
Yes.
But they'd always have, Zach Braff would have a voiceover bit at the end where he'd do a montage of all the characters. And it'd be all along the same theme of everybody realising they all love in different ways. He loves his biscuits. He loves his girlfriend. He loves treating patients. Yeah. And it's lovely in a way. Sometimes you need that. Like, I remember when I had a breakup once. Uh-huh. That girl I went out with. The only thing I could watch was Scrubs. Because it was like, it's the kind of TV that it fulfilled like my optimistic need. I needed some optimism in my life.
Yeah, totally.
So that's a good one, actually. What TV do you watch when you're...
When you're sad.
When you're miserable as...
Why do you do that? I have to beep it out. Somebody else emailed asking what our policy on swearing was. They've noticed that some swear words are beeped out.
Yeah, you just forget to take them out.
No, it's not. No. I actually have a policy. At the moment, because we also work on the radio, on a mainstream radio station, you'll find that our swear words tend to be beeped out. Other people's won't be.
Yeah.
Or the only case when swear words are left in ours is when it makes it funnier. Right. I'm willing to take the risk on funnier. Let's get on with the news. So should I continue with Prison Break? Please email if you finished Prison Break and tell me. studio@theboxsetpod.com. Should I spend my time on something else? studio@theboxsetpod.com. News this week?
Yes, you go to theboxsetpod.com/news. You'll find all the latest bits. I put as many videos and trailers and all the latest updates of stuff on there. One of the things I wanted to mention on there is James Franco is heading to TV land. Hey. He's signed on to star in the new Hulu adaptation. Hulu's an American channel.
Right.
It will come over here eventually. Adaptation of the Stephen King novel 11/22/63. This is a novel about a man who finds a time hole and he goes back in time. And that date there, the 22nd of the 11th, 1963.
Yeah.
Do you know what that date is, Howell? You should do.
JFK.
JFK died. Good guess. So that's the day JFK died. He goes back in time and his mission is he wants to try to stop JFK from dying.
Good.
It's really interesting. And my dad read the book. I think I got my dad this book ages ago and my dad loved it. So I'm quite excited. And James Franco's one of those actors that sometimes I really don't like him. Yeah. Like, I recently watched The Wizard of Oz one.
Oh, yeah.
Oz the Great and Powerful. Mm. He's so bad in that.
I don't know if it's him or the films.
Yeah, it might be a bit of both. But anyway, he can be good as well, like Pineapple Express.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, Sky Atlantic is bringing back Thronecast. So Sky Atlantic, when the Game of Thrones returns in April, they're going to have the programme afterwards where they, you know, the reaction piece of the episode. It's going to be presented by Mel?
From Mel and
Sue Perkins. Sue Perkins, yeah. The one with the short hair.
Just back off your mic a little bit.
Backing off the mic. Sue Perkins.
Yeah.
From the Bake Off. will be presenting it this year.
Right.
Because last year it tanked. It didn't do very well. It wasn't very popular. It's okay. A tough thing to do because you're doing like a very specific fan-based show. One of the ones that I think does it really well is the Talking Dead show presented by Chris Hardwick.
Yeah,
and he does like every Walking Dead. Walking Dead's massive though. Like every episode gets 60 million watches.
Yeah.
Afterwards, they do a companion piece where they talk to the stars, talk to celebrities about the episode that's just happened. So Thronecast is coming to Sky Atlantic,
cool.
And that might be interesting. I do want to mention as well, House of Cards is on its way end of this month.
Wow!
First of all, Better Call Saul has been brilliant.
Yeah,
I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
And I just love it.
Yeah.
Next up, end of this month, just as I'm probably going to be able to finish Better Call Saul, is going to be... Actually, no, one thing I want to mention about Netflix, though.
Yeah,
right. So the whole point of Netflix was they shove on 10 episodes at once. Boom, you watch it in a wanna.
You can box set it.
With Better Call Saul, it's getting updated every Tuesday.
Yeah.
Which is essentially they're doing what they were not there to do.
I know.
And I kind of find that, do you know, would that weird you out?
It is quite annoying, but then again, I wonder whether their fingers are on the pulse there, because like me, you're so busy watching Prison Break that you allow yourself an episode off to watch something else. You know, I wonder if what they're finding is people take things on in bulk now when they're ready to, and that might mean they wait longer than Better Call Saul.
I imagine with this, it's more of like an issue with like the fact that it's on AMC in America, so it's like a joint ownership deal.
That'll be why,
But also, House of Cards are coming back. There's another great trailer on our website, theboxsetpod.com/news, where you can see the tension between Frank Underwood and his good lady Claire. It's a really good, it's a really good sort of. So it's worth watching that latest trailer. It's getting my juices flowing.
Nice.
Also, I wanted to mention Billy Crystal's heading to TV as well.
Ooh.
Funny man, Billy Crystal. He's going to be doing a show on FX, the same channel that produced.
I can't believe you just said funny man, Billy Crystal.
That's what I wrote in my little blog bit here. Yeah. I'm quite embarrassed about it now.
Yeah, good.
You know, it's the same channel FX did Louis. Have you ever watched Louis, Howell?
No, I haven't yet.
You've got to watch Louis.
I know.
It won like 4 awards last week because it's hilarious. But it's not just funny. It's actually quite...
Well, what do you watch it on, Jamie?
You can watch it on DVD, Howell.
Are you sure?
Escape that one. Billy Crystal's going there. He's got a new show called The Comedians. It's going to be... He's going to play a version of himself.
Okay.
So Billy Crystal being Billy Crystal. So I imagine that'd be good. There's a trailer on there. You can see all the trailers, all the latest stuff.
Do you know what? Tom Hanks, if you've not made enough money, you do a satire about Tom Hanks in Scientology. That would be
Tom
the biggest
Hanks,
TV
Tom
series.
Cruise.
Tom Cruise, Tom sorry. Cruise. That would be the biggest TV series ever. Or maybe Tom Hanks playing Tom Cruise in that satire would be even funnier.
Yes.
Great. Right,
that's your news. I'm done here.
Please welcome to the Box Set Pod, Fife Dangerfield. Didn't quite hear the chimes there, but it...
Oh, come on, because I was shouting.
Yeah. But
why were you doing a Harold Bishop impression?
I don't know. Harold Bishop, God. I don't know about him.
Fife,
Harold Bishop.
Lead singer of the Guillemots and lead singer of Fife Dangerfield. His function on this podcast, if you haven't heard it before, is to be our guinea pig. He came to us with very little experience of box sets. And
I've never even seen a television programme
before. No, we're trying different things out. But first things first, Fife, last week you sent us a theme tune that you wrote for Luke Marsden, your partner in crime, who's on when you're not on, and he loved it. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. Well, you'll like this, guys. Well, especially Howell, because I think Jamie has more of a life outside the box set.
Go on.
But the other day, I was having a bit of an admin day in the house.
Yeah.
Having a clear up and stuff, and I listened back to every episode of the Box Set Pod.
Wow!
So I'm up to date. It's very good. I've been enjoying it.
Well, thank you for Luke's theme tune. I mean, the question is, with that amount of time on your hands, have you watched any more of Mad Men or Homeland?
Well, the truth is, I have watched. I've mainly been watching House of Cards again.
What?
because my girlfriend wanted to watch it. Because I sort of watched it when she was away, and so it's quite interesting watching it. But what I did, because I thought I should have something to talk to you about, I watched another 2 episodes of Mad Men.
Okay.
Okay.
And my opinion hasn't changed. In fact, if anything, I'm starting to get more and more annoyed with the fact that I'm not very interested. And I know this hurts you, and I know you think that there's something wrong with me. And even Luke was not happy about this. But I don't dislike it when I'm watching it. I'm happy to be in that place, but I just don't. The next evening, I'm not thinking, what's going to happen next? It's kind of like I can take it or leave it.
Well, I don't think you should feel bad because I think this is part of the experiment. You're not going to.
Howell was, Howell was.
The experiment isn't going the way that I hoped.
Howell wants it to go a certain way.
No,
you
created Frankenstein, basically.
Yeah, but this is how it seems to be how it works. Like my rant about Prison Break earlier is the exact opposite. There's too many hooks. There's too many reasons for me to watch the next episode. It just keeps going. The reason I love Mad Men. The reason Mad Men's coming in my spaceship if the apocalypse comes is because I just think it's a beautiful work of art. But then how far through? So you're still in the first series. How many episodes in are you?
I think I'm probably 7 episodes in.
Yeah. 7.
Yeah, I mean, you've given it the rule, which is 4.
Yeah.
And a bit more.
You have. But you know, the experiment has changed. I mean, for regular people listening to this, the rule is 4 episodes. Fife, though, is the guinea pig, and so we are challenging him to get to the end of season 1.
What I worry about with you, Fife, is that because you're almost being pressured and forced into watching it, you're going to end up hating it even more, like a rebellious child.
Force-fed
vegetables.
I don't feel any pressure, is it going to... Do you really think that this far in, if I'm not... feeling it, that something will change?
Maybe. Well, that's the question.
I mean, is the experiment now about how far...
Can
you push someone to watch something they don't want to watch before they like it?
Let's see.
Interesting. I think it's like that with a lot of things. Sometimes you can, I don't know, an example, mind you, I suppose I didn't listen to loads of him, but when I was one of the teenagers, for ages, Bob Dylan and Tom Waits, actually, both of them, I just remember for ages, it was just like,
Waits,
I was just like, oh, he just sounds stupid. Why is he singing like that? He sounds like he's trying to do all... And then one day I just heard... I think it was Rain Dogs, the record or something, and the mood was right and everything, and it just clicked. And once you're in, you don't get out again. You get it. And it could be like that. It might be the episode 11. Suddenly I'm like,
okay,
cancel the plans.
Okay,
I'm watching all 10 series.
Here's my cutoff point, right? My cutoff point for this experiment is the end of the episode 1 of season 2. Right?
Okay.
That's the point at which you are free to fly away.
If you get to season two, episode 1, and you still don't want to carry on and you dislike the show overall, then the experiment with Mad Men ends and we move on. But can we shake hands on season 2, episode 1?
Well, that's a bit hard down a phone line, guys. But,
all right, that's
the
deal.
I'll virtually shake your hand. I mean, Jamie, do you feel as strongly about it as Hal does?
No, I understand where you're coming from because I think the first series is probably the hardest series to enjoy. But I kind of see where Howell's coming from too because I know that... I feel like you will like it when you get to season 2, but obviously I don't want to force anybody to... I would never force anybody to watch something past the point of them caring, because then then I don't know what you're doing. But I mean...
But you're right, Fife. This experiment, it means so much more. It's so much bigger than us. This experiment is, every time that we've had a discussion about music and music taste, pop music versus less pop music and all of that stuff, this is really interesting. Can somebody learn to love something?
Yes.
Or is it just like,
look at this, like
four episodes?
Look at it like an arranged marriage, okay?
Yes, exactly.
I think what's really interesting with this as well is that it's not that I dislike it, because there are some things where you just, you loathe it or something, but maybe it's easier to go from that into flipping it around and loving it, whereas with this, it's the fact that I quite enjoy it. I'm sure I'll have another evening sometimes. Watch a bit of Mad Men, but it's not...
Let me give you a context, right? Just in case this helps at all. When I watch it, I watch it with like I'm watching a documentary. I watch it and go, this is as close to an actual factual account of how this world worked, how the media, entertainment, advertising, that whole world got to grips with itself as it went from the 50s to the 60s to the 70s. And it's tracking...
And how do you know that? I mean, well, it does seem that way.
But... Yeah, just because I think that is what it's about. That is the subject. It's how did a world like that, which rules our world at the moment, marketing and things, how did that world really get to grips with the social changes that were going on, with the incredibly male world that turned into something that had to be more equal, the white world that had to become more black.
Who were we talking to the other day that said, I think we asked somebody if they'd watched Mad Men and they said they started but they found it too sexist.
Yeah, Marsha, a couple of weeks ago.
But that's exactly what it's trying to display, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane, but...
All right, well, we'll see how you get on. But the important question, you're getting on the spaceship, Fife. Mm-hmm. It's the apocalypse. What TV box sets, two or three maybe, would you carry close to your chest?
I don't know what it says about me, but the first thing that came to my head was Kirby Enthusiasm.
Good.
That is a brilliant choice.
No one said that yet.
It does say a lot about humans, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely. Does. And it about does. Our sort of social awkwardness.
So you're stepping on the rocket, you've got Curb Your Enthusiasm. Is there anything else in the bag or is it all being left?
I don't know if it would count as a box set. I mean, I think...
Jericho.
It would bemuse Jericho. Hey, have you watched any more of Jericho?
I've not even touched it. Every time I scan past it on Netflix, I just giggle.
Come on. It's amazing.
No, I will do it.
Yeah, eventually, yeah. Go on. Anything else going with you?
Would the day, you know, the day to day, would that count?
That's not really a, yes.
Not really a, but it's not really a fictional series. Well, you had that debate 1 week, didn't you? What is a box set?
No, but that's great.
Absolutely right. That is, your choices are awesome, actually.
Comedy says more about life than drama quite often.
And the day to day is brilliant sort of parody of human beings and life in the media.
What was really interesting about that programme was it kind of... It made you see how ridiculous things were that you didn't maybe realise were ridiculous before. And I was like 14 or something when that was on TV. And the day to day.
What are you doing? Are you just rubbing a duvet?
Are you rubbing the phone on your face?
No, I am. I pace around sometimes when I'm on the phone. Hang on. I don't know why.
Yes, you're right, though. I mean,
it's so
just
much energy.
Brilliant. Chris Morris is just a genius.
Yeah, this news... That's kind of spoof news night style program, but I remember when I saw it, and I'd never noticed things like how ridiculous the way people talk over news reports is. Yeah. The way that when they're talking, their voice goes up and down like this, and you just took that as that's the news, and then day to day did it, and suddenly you're like, oh god, that's. Why on earth do people talk like this? I've never heard someone talking like that in a conversation.
You know, in a lot of ways, it was as revolutionary day to day as Monty Python.
Yeah, totally.
The Goons. It was something that just transformed.
Anything else? Is House of Cards going with you?
No, I mean it's amazing, but I'm trying to think of things that. If you're trying to sum up humanity.
No, it's all right. But this is good.
Those two you've chosen are enough, actually, because they are definitely classics.
They're both comedies, aren't they, interestingly? Yeah.
About House of Cards, what is your actual girlfriend making of House of Cards?
She's really enjoying it too, which is interesting because she's in TV. So I thought she might be more critical.
How hard do you find it to, because I've watched a lot of TV with people who haven't watched what I've watched, how hard do you find it to not reveal or get excited at a spoiler that's coming along?
It's difficult, but I did alright, although I realised I'd given away, she pointed out I'd given away one spoiler and I didn't even realise I had.
Right, well listen.
It wasn't a big one. Sorry, go on.
Sorry, no, we've got to crack on. We've got someone waiting for us, but we've got 2 weeks till you're next on. So try and get Mad Men boxed off. Where should Fife go after that? studio@theboxsetpod.com. I've got an idea of where maybe Fife should go, thinking along the lines of politics.
Well, I'm going to really try and get to episode one of series two.
All right.
For you.
Good luck.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
Fife Dangerfield, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'd like you to welcome now a man who is one of my favourites. favourite comic actors. He is in Stella. His name is Russell Gomer. And I know that this is a box set podcast. I know that we're going to talk about TV, obviously. But the reason I'm getting Russell on as well is that he tells some of the best stories that I've ever heard. So we'll talk a little bit about Stella. But also, I'm poking around for some good stories, which I hope is going to be a good listen on the podcast. So, Russell Gomer. Hello, Ross.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. Say hello to Jamie. Are you going to say hello to Russell?
Hi, Russell.
Jamie.
How are you?
Pretty good, mate.
Russell, is you play Yanto, yeah?
I do, yes. Yanto Bead. Yanto is Bead. His full name.
Russell, how big a following does Stella have? What are the sort of viewing figures of Stella?
Well, I don't know the very last figures for last series, but they're picking up by tens of thousands, apparently. So the last five episodes of the last series went out, which was series three, and they picked up by the last everyone, the last five picked up 10,000 more. I think it's 1.75 million, I think, at the moment, something around about that.
Wow, that's good, because it's on Sky One, isn't it?
Yeah.
And does it get picked up in America?
Again, I don't know about that. I'm terrible on organisational things.
That's all right.
I got accosted by a wonderful Australian gentleman in Swansea the other day. I was down there doing a show at the Swansea Grand, and he ran across the road and showed him up and said he was over from Australia for 3 weeks visiting family, and his wife had recognised me. And she was waving across the road. She was too scared to come over and chat, apparently. And this is an Australian, you know.
Wow.
They can be tender, loving souls, I think.
Now, if box set fans have struggled with Luke Marsden's accent before, a Wigan accent, wait till they deal with Russell Gomer.
Hardcore Welsh.
And this is the fascinating thing. You know, it's nice when a Welsh thing like that is so specifically set in one regional accent can go that far around the world. It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Well, is the show set in Pontypridd?
Pontypridd, Jamie. I've told you that.
Pontypridd, is it, Russell?
Okay, I'll come up to 10. No. it's double D is always the voiced V.
So yeah, Pontypridd.
But it's not set in Pontypridd, no. I am actually standing in Pontypridd at the moment, speaking to you in my kitchen, but it's set in a fictional town called Pontybury. Yeah?
I see. And you play Yanto, who is a comic part. Now, I have to admit, I've watched a few episodes of the first season of Stella, but I just haven't stuck with it. My mum and dad absolutely love it. I know a lot of people who do. And I went to it specifically to see you last Christmas, I think. You're hilarious, aren't you, Russell? You're a very funny man.
I like a bit of physical comedy as well as a verbal, you know, and Stella, the series allows a lot of that. So there's a lot of comic business which we work out, you know, very quickly because everyone's up for it, and there's a lot of good physical comedy actors as well there. And
now this is made by Ruth Jones, who famously is one half of Gavin and Stacey. This is her newest project, and it's gone on now. How many years? How many seasons have you done?
Well, so we've finished the fourth.
Right, and is there another one on the way?
Apparently, there's talk of a fifth series. Yes,
it must be good for an actor to have, like, to know you've got some guaranteed work in the bank. Because, you know, it's a tough game acting, isn't it, Russell? It must be nice to have that sort of security.
Tell him, Ross.
Of a TV show.
Oh, I tell you, it's a blessing, you know, when something like that happens, when you get several years, consecutive years of knowing you're going to be sort of, you know, in pocket, as it were. It is a tough business.
And are you signed up for the next series?
No, not yet.
There's that security. Fingers crossed, though, it'll come along, yeah?
Yeah.
I want to talk comedy with you. So comedy is an important part to most box sets that we've got. In other box sets, Russ, who do you see that you think is a really good comic actor, who has some really good comic timing about them?
I'll tell you who I think is good, who you remind me a bit sometimes of, Russell, is Ty Burrell in The Modern Family, who plays Phil Dunphy.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah, it's something like that. I think it's about kind of comedy is when you do it with an elegance, physical comedy I'm talking about, if you do it with a kind of physical elegance, but it doesn't necessarily look elegant. And even if it's the most clownish, clod-hopping bit of comedy, there's an elegance attached to it. Otherwise, it just doesn't quite come off. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, Charlie Chaplin just springs to mind when you're saying that. So, there's a ballerina about him.
Yeah, exactly. And, and also it can be sort of less large as well, you know, quite small things, quite subtle things, movements of the head and hand, whatever.
So let's do a comedy workshop now with Jamie. So Jamie's got a scene, right?
Oh, what?
He's got to walk into the room with a little green bag that I've got here. There you go, Jamie.
Yeah, okay.
All he's got to do is walk in. Say this is your script in Stella, right? All the stage directions are is you've got to bring in a bag, green bag, put it on the table and say good afternoon. Make that funny.
Well, I think play high status, so come in looking very, very sort of man about town with your green handbag, yeah?
Okay.
Yeah, sort of, it's the wrong thing. It's the wrong thing. Your mother bought it for you.
Walking in, high status, really proud of your bag.
Yeah, okay.
Slightly tired. So you're slightly tired. You've had a hard day, yeah?
Okay,
hard day
at the office.
Okay.
You're not thinking of putting the bag down on the table. You're thinking about making a cup of tea.
Okay.
It just so happens that as you go towards the kettle in the kitchen, you put your bag down on the table in passing, right?
Okay. All right. Are you ready for me?
Yeah, let's do it.
A tea in my hand. All right. Good afternoon.
Wasn't very funny, Russ.
See, what it was, you should have realised, as you put the green bag down on the table and went towards the make yourself a cup of tea, my God, I've just got a green handbag which I've put down on the table as an afterthought.
Oh, how do I show
you,
that?
You see it, and it's almost as if you do it yourself with your face. You have a camera suddenly zooms in on your face in realization of the horror that you've had a green handbag on your shoulder all day. Yeah.
Should I go good afternoon?
Yeah, or something like. Oh, God. Good afternoon.
You nailed it. I can't follow that, Russell.
The horror and the panic comes on the line, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. On the line. Always on the word. Use the words.
That's good. You see, you've created an entire situation there. And Russell's done that for an entire career, basically worked out ways of stealing the scene off other people who the focus should really be on. Is that right, Russ?
That's right, yeah, always upstaging, yeah.
Can you remember, I guess, did you have to audition for the role in Stella?
Yes, I did, yeah.
And how did that go? What was your audition scene? Was there a bit of slapstick you had to perform in front of Ruth Jones?
No, not really. This was just sitting down comfortably in a chair in the film studios. And I was given a very good scene to read. And usually if you got for a kind of small part, because you're not in sort of the series as a regular, let's say, but for a small part. And if you're lucky enough to get a speech within that small part, a part which is just one scene, let's say, the part usually doesn't move the plot on. You've got a couple of lines of dialogue which don't really add up to much. However, now and again, you get graced with something where you've got a speech bang in the middle, and the character does move the plot on in a single scene for everyone else involved in the story.
Oh, right.
That's when you can make something of it.
And
I was lucky enough to have one of those scenes. Janko, the barman, he was just the barman in the ex-servicemen's club. And Stella comes in with her boyfriend looking for her brother, who's gone AWOL, as it were. And it's a wonderful speech about soldiers, they can go AWOL because they have dark places to go in their minds. They need to get away and be on their own and all that kind of stuff. And to do something with it. And
did you feel like after the audition? Did you feel like you'd nailed it? Did you feel like I'm gonna get this?
Yes. I kind of thought maybe the character's got kind of a dark edge to him. He's a little bit weird. Who knows what's going on in his head? So there's a bit of a mystery there still. Yeah. So we did that, and he went well, and they called me in to do the one scene, one day swimming, in the first series, and that was it. So the whole first 10 episodes, I just did one scene really, and then I had a phone call from the agent saying they like the character, so they want to make him a regular for the next season and so on. But that's what comes out of if you just plot it correctly in your head and use a speech. So people, it kind of oozes character, yeah?
Mm. Yeah. Was it a case of the first series went out, you had the one scene that you were in for that particular show, and the character tested well or went down well with the audience, or was it just that Ruth Jones and liked what you did?
Yes, I think it was the latter, yeah.
Yeah.
Ruth Jones liked it. I thought that's useful as a character that can be used. What had been written, and then what I did with it, sort of together, sort of made up the possibility of a decent regular character, you know, that could add something to the community of Pontebury.
I think that must be almost more rewarding than getting, like, a big role. Making a small role into a bigger role must be a really, like, it must feel really good.
Yeah, I felt triumphant, I've got to say, yeah.
So what's the worst thing you've been asked to do in an audition?
Well, an audition for an advert, and it was many, many years ago, up in London, where I had to play a guitar. it's not a ridiculous thing, but I just felt ridiculous playing this. There was four people sitting at the table watching me, and they'd ask me, you know, one guy with an American accent had asked me, I'll wrestle. We'd like to see you do some air guitar. Okay, take it away. It was when he said take it away that I felt a bit... but a real guitar, you know, and played him a good, you know, a few decent riffs. I would be taking it away, you know, but you can't really take away air guitar. I wanted to explain that to him, and I was angry that I didn't before I left. I didn't put my heart into it, and I didn't get that particular role.
What was the advert?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
What age did you get into acting, Ross?
Let's see. Well, I was 82 to 85. I went to college, drama college.
Okay, so you were in your 20s. 30s. 20s.
Yeah, well, I was in my 20s. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, at 23 I went to college. Yeah.
I see. And what were you doing before then?
Working for local government. Local government administrator, yeah.
Really?
Cardiff City Council, yeah.
What could possibly have inspired you to want to go and be an actor instead?
Because I thought, what's the opposite of doing a desk job?
Yeah.
I first thought, oh, well, okay, I'm so bored. I'm not being stimulated. I'm at a desk. What's the opposite of that? Oh, I know. Sort of running around the countryside with army kit on and throwing thunder flashes, which are, you know, sort of make the grenade they use for exercise, which is what I did then for several years with the Territorial Army.
Oh, really?
While I stayed in government. That kept me a bit sane, yeah. So on weekends I could be out in the fresh air running around in conifer forests, crawling, you know, through the pine needles in the early hours of the morning. towards the Blue Army, the enemy.
What was the most horrific moment of being in the Territorial Army that made you think I'm just going to go for acting?
There was a moment once when I was on guard duty, early hours of the morning in Denmark we were, and we were told the Danish Rangers were out, and they might attack sort of the area that we were sort of camping in.
Well, this is for real, or is this an exercise?
That's an exercise. Yeah.
Okay, so the Danish Rangers might be coming to attack.
That's right, yes. Yeah. And, of course, and on exercise, you can get taken prisoner and taken, hauled off to say if you're the Blue Army, then you're up against the Red Army or whatever. It's just the designated colours, yeah?
Yeah.
And you get hauled off. And you might get tortured a little, you know, by having cold water thrown over you while you're stripped naked, tied, handcuffed to a Land Rover.
Is this what happened?
Middle of February, you know, and it's just in a field somewhere, and in Brecon or whatever. And and you get asked how many men in your unit, you know, what field force you are, you know, what kit have your guys got available to them? Yeah?
This is an exercise. Did you at any point shout, "This is an exercise"?
Yeah, but that wouldn't help. Yeah.
Did you give in straight away? Did you wilt under torture, Russ?
No, never.
Did you hold it together?
Yeah, always.
So you're naked, strapped to a Land Rover, they're throwing cold water over you, they're asking you how many, what uniforms has your team got?
They kind of ask very specific questions, like, you know, grid references, map references, where all your sort of stuff is placed, all your armed forces are placed. And if you give in, they'll stop torturing you and put your clothes back on and they'll feed you, but, you know.
Wow. I would have given in, Russell, to be honest with you.
So you're not made of stir enough stuff, mate. That's the problem.
Was that one of the last...
You should go in for radio or something like that.
Yeah, we're cowards.
Was that one of the last exercises you took part in?
No, but one thing is, the most frightening I've ever been on, we knew the Danish Rangers were out. Now, so 3 o'clock in the morning in Denmark, and I was suddenly convinced...
Hang on a minute, this isn't the Danish Rangers story.
This is the Danish Rangers story now, right?
Okay, all right, so the Land Rover was a whole different thing.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, different thing. It's in Brecon.
Okay, so we're back in, we're with the Danish.
I suddenly thought, I'd been up 36 hours, I think, possibly more, driving Land Rovers and things and all sorts of stuff, and lots of aircraft going over, low-flying aircraft over the treetops. And that's the most frightening noise. It's just as frightening as a nearby explosion. It's just a sudden sort of... as jets fly over, right? And whenever that happens, you've got to get your NBC kit on, just in case they've dropped, you know, nerve gas.
So NBC kit?
It's the nuclear biological chemical sort of kit, respirator, and the charcoal suit that keep protecting you from all that.
For any of our international listeners, the Territorial Army, these are the guys who go out at the weekend.
Yeah, it's the guys who chump around in fields. I mean, it's not real, is it? I mean, you weren't really scared, were you, Russell?
Well, you know, it's when you're there, there's a lot of stuff going on around you, a lot of guys, and it's, you know, you have blanks, you fire blank rounds, but people can get killed from having a blank round fired at them very close.
Really?
Jamie, before Christmas, we were on a plane with 250 kids, and you screamed louder than them on the landing.
Yeah, but that was that's actually dangerous.
Russell's in a biochem suit in the middle of a forest at night. He's been up for 36 hours, and there's jets going over his head.
Yeah, and I became convinced I could see the Danish Rangers calling towards me, or, you know, the shadow was calling towards me. And I was panicking, thinking, I'm not sure that they are people calling towards me. They might be just logs of trees, fallen trunks. But if I open up now with the SLR rifle, start firing, blank rounds, of course, it'll wake everyone in the camp up, and there's like hundreds and hundreds of guys behind me, sort of bedded down for the night. Right. So I looked towards where I knew my partner, sentry, was hiding behind a tree. Yeah. You know where your fellow sentries are sort of hunkered down and amongst the undergrowth. Yeah. And I looked towards him and I thought, shall I whisper? I said, Vince, do you see that? Shall I do that? Will that alert the Danish Rangers crawling towards me? If there are Danish Rangers crawling towards me, and if there aren't tree trunks, what to do? And then I realised that Vince was sleeping in it, because I could hear that kind of a low murmuring snore. Yeah? I thought, shit. There's no use asking for his help. I started throwing stones at him. Little stones into the undergrowth to try and wake him up. To no avail. I thought, okay, what I'm going to have to do, I'm just going to have to open up with the SLR. Because I can see that there's a guy crawling towards me. Yeah, he's about 10 yards away. And as I took the safety catch off and I started to press the trigger with my finger, a shaft of moonlight came through the trees and just hit this trunk. And it was obviously a trunk of a tree. And I suddenly had a shock, thinking, my God, the mind plays so many tricks.
Wow.
At night, 3 o'clock in the morning in Denmark.
Wow. So your answer to the question, when is have you been most scared, is when you saw a log crawling towards you.
That's right, yes.
It's wow.
The responsibility of waking up the whole camp. That's the fear. Make me naked in a field, tied to a Land Rover. Yeah? Where wow. They bounce you around the field for an hour. Anything other than that, you know. That's responsibility, that's what you don't want.
I remember...
Acting said it can be irresponsible. You're just the only person responsible to is the script, yourself and the script.
Yeah.
Well, here's another more terrifying moment, in a way.
Okay.
We're on a ship, flat-bottomed landing ship.
The kind they use on D-Day, the kind you saw on D-Day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, it was the Submersible. It was one of the two landing ships that they used in the Falklands.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Unfortunately, it was the Sir Galahad and the Submersible, and remember when the Argentinian jet caught them when they were still offloading all the equipment.
Oh, wow.
When, you know, a lot of the Scots Guards and Welsh Guards, and, well, unfortunately, a lot of soldiers were killed that day.
Wow.
But this was just a year before that.
God.
And I've always felt, you know, I always looked back and thought, well, I was on that.
Yeah.
Oh, shut that craft. Going over to... I actually was going over to Denmark. same exercise I was telling you about earlier.
Ah.
And, well, you got bunk beds, and they're not double bunk beds. They're three high, you know? You got one, two, three. So the top one is just a few feet from the ceiling of the place you're sleeping in. And they put the lights out and just bring on infrared lights, tactical, because everything's tactical. As if you're going to war, you know, it's just practice for that.
Mm.
So that's what happened in the night. But we'd hit in Gale Force 9, and being a flat-bottom craft, because it has to carry all sorts of vehicles, you know, huge lorries and things, the thing is up and down, my God, I tell you. And everyone was seasick, everyone was seasick and puking up and all together on their bunk beds. And I thought, I can't be having this. I don't want to be sick.
How many of you are in the room?
Oh, it was many. Lots of people all over the place. You know,
three high, all puking off the edge of the beds.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't mind a good puke after a shed full of booze, yeah? That's great. Just give it a bit. And it's over with. But seasickness stays with you. It doesn't matter how much you puke. Yeah, you don't feel better. That's a problem.
Oh, God.
Puking, not feeling better, nothing worse. I thought to myself, okay, use your mind. Russell, use your mind. Okay? What else are you here for other than to challenge yourself and overcome these odds? And that's what I did. I thought, okay, rather than hate the rising up and coming down, the up and down motion all the time, begin to like it, if you can. Imagine it like a fairground ride. Yeah? So I lay back on the bunk, shut my eyes, shut out the noise as much as I could of the groaning and puking, and I began to like the rise and fall. Yeah? So I hadn't been sick as yet. Yeah? Yeah. I was just starting to feel it. That sensation went away, and all I had was this beautiful rise and fall. Yeah? Every time it hit a wave and came down the other side, the whole ship, and allowed me to sleep. Yeah, I went to sleep. I woke up the next morning, hungry, right? Really, really hungry.
How annoying!
I'll go to the galley and get some food. So I went across and picked up my tray, metal tray with different compartments in it, you know, that they ladle the stuff into. Went to sit down, and I realised I was the only guy from the whole parachute regiment that had turned up to meet. And over in the corner were a bunch of Royal RCT guys who man the soldiers who man these type of ships, because it's all to do with transport. Royal Corps transport guys. I think there were some Marines who were hitching a lift as well. And they were all right about it, that they work on these ships, yeah? And they were in the corner. But I was the only person from the parachute regiment that day that turned up, so they gave me a round of applause.
Legend.
Oh, Russell.
That's impressive, sir.
Ah, we should get Russell on again in the future for some more stories.
Yeah, and one last thing before you go. I mean, this is we love TV on the podcast.
Oh,
and,
yeah, we're supposed to talk about TV.
I wanted to know, what TV shows do you... Are there any that you particularly love and are passionate about and are watching at the moment? Or
Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, of course.
I hate to sound cliche. I'm sure everyone says that, Game of Thrones. But I'll tell you the thing I love most about it was it's just the actor... who plays Tyrion Lannister?
Oh, brilliant. Peter Dinklage. He's amazing.
Yeah. Not only is he such a great actor, and there are lots of good actors, isn't it? But his acting is fantastic. And he has the most tender speeches with the other character, the whore that he's in falling in love with.
Yeah.
But not just that. The fact is, it's a fantasy, like a magical fantasy, you know? And for the first time in history, an actor who is a dwarf is not playing a magical dwarf, but actually playing a man who's been born with dwarfism or whatever the term is. Yeah, and has had to put up with that, and it's been a curse to him because his father hated it from the moment and thought of
you're right. I can't think of another story where it's not some kind of magical dwarf.
Exactly.
No, it's true that, yeah. And it's very moving as well.
Yeah, you know, it's magical fantasy, and there you go.
I was thinking about this, because we had Luke Evans on at Christmas for the Hobbit, and I was thinking, how annoyed would you be if you were a what is the correct term? Smaller person.
Yeah, what is it?
I think it's a dwarf is...
Dwarf is kind of all right, but a small person as well. If you were a small person, and finally... six Hollywood-sized films with endless dwarfs in them gets made, and not one of them is an actual dwarf. It's all regular-sized people shrunk down. Wouldn't that annoy the hell out of you?
Certainly. It has to. There's not much work there going on then. Certainly.
Yeah,
yeah, and you're right. Tyrion is brilliant. Like, it's, you know, some of the scenes with his father, who played by Charles Dance, is just like so sad and tragic, and the Shire scenes as well. You know, you really feel like, God, this guy's an amazing actor. I mean, he's a great character. I love Tyrion as a character, but he
and then the character is the most straight up honourable character.
Yeah.
In the whole thing. I mean, his flaw is that he drinks heavily. But then you can't blame him for the lack of sort of familial life that he had, you know, with his father.
Yeah.
He just drinks heavily, and fantastic. Really.
And to bring that full circle, Russell.
A giant of a character.
Yeah. Very good. Good quote. To bring that full circle, the woman who plays his whore is Charlie Chaplin's granddaughter.
No, that's a different one.
Whoa.
Is it not?
That's a different woman.
I think you find it is.
No, it's the one who the wedding, the red wedding, the one where she was married to one of the sons of Sean Bean.
Huh?
It's not that. Cher's not Chaplin's, I don't think.
Right.
You sure?
I'm quite sure, yeah.
Una Chaplin.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Oh, well.
No, well, still, there's a connection, you know.
There's a connection.
That's
life is. Russell Gomer, thank you for talking to us.
Yeah.
We'll see you on Stella, and we'll get you back on for some more stories in the future.
Oh, yeah, yes. I mean, there's some great stuff coming up, mind, in this next series, Stella.
Good.
I think it's a larger kind of series in style. There are a lot more community scenes in it. You know, where people always love the tender moments, you know, of dialogue and sort of that happens inside the house or the pub, whatever. But they also love the big scenes that happen when there's a rugby match, you know, or a boxing match or some such. And there are a lot of those sort of where the whole village, the characters from all the village are involved in something happening this series. Yeah. And they're very, very good, very, very funny. And as I say, a lot of physical comedy in sort of served up as a group of comic actors. You get all that. That'll hit you in the face, you know. And tenderness at the same time, nicely placed. So the balance, I think, they've got the balance beautifully right. Yeah. sort of haha, guts wrenching comedy, and a bit of tenderness.
Oh,
yeah,
lovely.
The balance
well
is good.
Well described, Russell.
That's fantastic. Can't wait to see it.
Well, Russell, thank you.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Ross Tolgoma. Thank you very much, Russell. Now, listen, next week, a very special box set pod. It is finally time for me to go to Miami and try and track down Dexter's house. I'm going to do a Dexter special.
Whoa.
Next wow. week on the box set pod. See you then.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.